Welcome to Season 9, Episode 7 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we discuss our changing gaming preferences. We also ponder the concept of Session Zero. Again, welcome to Season 9, Episode 6 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this week is Chris and Paul. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Greetings.
We've sorted out computer problems and other things for this show, so hopefully we can get to it. But how is everyone doing?
Doing good.
Doing better.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was sad last time only doing it with the two of us, you know.
Yeah. We muddled through, though.
Yeah, we muddled through. I think that's a good... What was that?
I heard, well done to you both.
Yeah, good. Anything before we just get into it? Because there's actually quite a little plethora of Kickstarters.
Well, I'd say let's plow through and see what happens.
All right, let's just start at... in no particular order. Let's start with Tyrants and Hellions, a book of villains for the 5th edition. The goal on this is kind of high. They're asking for almost $20,000. They're like $19,500. That seems crazy. I don't know. Yep. Especially since, I'm not sure. But it's, 250 pages for stuff. It contains 12 complete villains with schemes, layers, and backstories. And then... it says, finally, the book contains villainous archetypes, options for every player class if you have a group that wants to take a walk in the air, and then, I guess, methods both mechanical and thematic used to create villains that spark imagination of your players. So, I guess it's kind of, here's some sample fleshed-out villains for you, and here's some, basically, content to how you can create your own villains. So, I guess that's not too bad. $23,
$23
for the PDF.
PDF, yeah.
That's, I don't know. That's not bad, but that's not something I want to play. $50 for the PDF and the book. Hardcover.
I don't know if I need an entire book of villains and bad guys, but, you know, the thing is if you used it a handful of times, it'd probably be worth it.
Yeah. Probably. I probably would never get it in hardcover. I'd probably just do PDF.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I think that's one of the things, especially now in the modern era, I find is that there are certain things like core rule books I always want in hardcover or softcover. But a lot of other things, I don't care. I'll do it in digital format because it makes things easier. Does that make...
If I'm going to run something, I want to have a physical version of it. If it's just something to read or that I might just use excerpts from... I can do with a digital version of it too.
Well, you know, here's the thing. It's like adventures. I would rather have the digital version print out what I need because I'll just mark it up as I'm playing.
Yep.
Okay.
So,
well, considering you're a villain, you'll probably want to customize it and make it your own. Like, you know, even if the thing's relatively in depth, you'll want to spice it up and give it your own style, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, no, I was just saying it was kind of interesting, though, that, you know, I mean, that's I think that's the way I'm approaching things now. It's like core rule books are something that I'm going to use at the gaming table a lot, probably hard, you know, printed version, but almost everything else, I go digital. And if it's a game that might be interesting to look at and get information from, but maybe never play, PDF. But that's just me. All right, why don't we go to the next one, which is The Sword, the Crown, and the Unspeakable Power. Which describes itself as a tabletop role-playing game powered by the Apocalypse system. And focuses on power, intrigue, and shifting alliance in a dark fantasy setting. And that's a mouthful.
Looks fairly high concept.
Yeah. They've already reached their goal, though, so that's not bad. So if you just want to pay $10 for the rule book... that's not bad.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
No.
See, this is what I'm talking about. That's a reasonable price for a PDF. And I guess the soft cover is $25. Still, not bad.
That's actually a pretty good deal, too.
I don't understand why you would need the hardcover, though, for $40. That's like something somebody threw in just to have. But it's weird.
I think if you're going to make it one of your cornerstone games, it might be nice.
Yeah. But it has 68 backers for that.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Just that I find that interesting.
Yeah. Kind of fun looking at the archetypes here. The Adept, the Beloved, the Black Hood, the Bloodletter, the Crown, the Gauntlet, the Hex. You can definitely tell they're going for a particular type of narrative story.
Right. And, you know, using the Apocalypse system, that stuff happens, so. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Dungeon World, Apocalypse World.
Yeah.
You know, there's other, Tremulous uses it. So, they all have. So, it's going to be that style of game. But they reach their goal, so hell, if you're interested in a $10 PDF, that's not bad. All right, a Pathfinder adventure for us, the Proteus Gambit. I don't know, 4 to 5 fourth level PCs. I don't know why, but the graphic doesn't do anything for me. Mm-hmm. An Alterkind.
Ooh.
Known universe is not nice neighbors. Monsters seem to look at the edges, black edges of space. So, It's a sci-fi adventure, but it's a Pathfinder compatible. That's a little weird. Do this have conversion notes, or is there an actual game that it's for science fiction?
Yeah, well, it feels like to me it's basically trying to jump the gun for the Starfinder. The Pathfinder is going to release shortly.
Sounds like
they might be trying to get in a back door here before anything gets started.
That's interesting. You know? I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. I've kind of not been doing any Pathfinder stuff lately.
Yeah, neither have I.
No worries.
They've got kind of a minimalist Kickstarter page, so.
Yeah.
I wish them luck.
Yeah, interesting the risk and challenges here. I don't know. It might be done, it might not be, but I'm kind of curious. At the risk of sounding like a Disney princess, it almost feels like it needs a little more to it.
Yeah. I mean, they're only asking $2,000, but they only have $434.
So, 15 days, so.
It's possible, but usually, I don't know how many days they started with, but usually when you're at least halfway done, you should be at least halfway through your goal, you know, your Kickstarter amount.
That initial bump should get you pretty close to halfway, and word of mouth should get you. Well,
I mean, next
interesting,
up,
interesting, interesting concepts.
Yeah. Next up, we have the Folio number 14, first edition Pathfinder 5th edition format adventure module, and I guess this is kind of what they've been doing. They've been running a Kickstarter for each one of these folios, if memory serves me, because I think we talked about 13 a while back. It's weird, though. I mean, they only have 5 days left on their Kickstarter, and they're about two-thirds. They're three-fifths of their goal, so they're about 60%. But that's not good. Maybe it's just people are interested in adventures right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
That art is a little rough looking.
Oh, on the front of that?
Yeah, that's...
It kind of reminds... It does kind of remind me of some of the early Dragon magazine covers, and I'm talking early,
and not in a good way.
Well,
I mean, I understand where they're going with it, but I just feel like it could be better, I guess.
Yeah.
My biggest grumble is they don't actually tell us what actually contains for the folio, like part one of the White Ship campaign. That's great. What is the White Ship campaign? I'm not finding it anywhere on the page.
Yeah.
Now, it's possible it's written somewhere else here. But just a quick one paragraph on each of these adventures to sell it would really help make a decision here. Like, when it comes to...
There is a note. What is the White Ship?
Ooh. Okay, that's...
This happy. Legendary vessel is the last of the stone ships of... I can't pronounce that.
Of the Corsair Sorcerer Kings and their Dwarven allies. Yep. It is said to be made completely of white marble the size of a small city. Soldiers dread fog brines of the open ocean as they find that the cursed ship swells. Molo has taken a noble of ancient Corsair bloodline to draw the ship to them so they might conquer in the world, and the heroes have the ability to stop them. Okay, now I'm having flashbacks to Pirates of the Dark Water. That's actually not bad.
Yeah. So, there you go. You just had to read on.
So, look up, look down.
Yeah, it's always tough. So, here's an odd one that I just... is the App of Holding.
I saw this.
Yeah, and apparently I guess they're going to be doing an iOS and an Android version.
They made their goal.
Yeah, they were only asking for $110.
Yeah.
And it's like $2.
Yeah.
For the app. That's doable. Although, I guess it's okay.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where I don't know.
I don't envision myself ever using anything like this.
Right. Me neither.
Yeah. I guess it's going to be fun to use, but I probably use an Excel sheet for what it's trying to do.
You know, I think that's where I would go with this for the most part. Is I wouldn't do this stuff either. It makes no sense to spend money on an app. I mean, it's kind of like there's all those apps that they have for Munchkin, and it's like there's tons of them, free ones. I mean, this seems like an app that someone would do, make it for fun, and just like release it for free. I don't know. That's just me.
Yep.
Well, he made his money, so obviously somebody wants it. So.
Yep.
Yeah. No. I mean, they've reached their goal. I mean, there's been 42 backers, so 42 people want it.
Right on.
So more power to you. I mean, like I said, for $2, that's not bad. And I guess he actually, if you pledge more, he has some extra stuff. Like there's, I don't know what the Tartal RPG tool is. And then there's something called the Vulcan Sacrifice. So, I don't know what the Vulcan Sacrifice is. I'd actually have to.
Yeah, I think there are a bunch of apps he's written. Yeah. So.
Well, again, you know, if he's having fun building little programs and people are buying it. I got no issues with that.
Hey, beer money, as they used to say. Beer money. Yep. All right, next up is one that is semi-interesting to me. Just because I own several of the old editions. Talos Lanta, The Savage Land. And this one is... It has... I guess it's going to have its own games version, and then there's going to be a 5th edition OGL, and then an open D6 version. And it looks like $5 for the PDF, and then if you want the hardcover, it's like $40. Or, not for hardcover, is it soft or hard? It just says print. The mock-ups that they're showing looks the hardcover. Yeah. And the whole premise of this one is it takes place before Talos Lanta as we know it is the assumption. It's like at the fall. It's like the how did they describe it here? Time was the new age. So it takes place after the great disaster is what it's described as, I believe. So that could be interesting. Savage World, have you guys ever, either one of you ever looked at Savage World or played Savage World? Not Savage World, Talos Lanta. Savage World, yes, everyone.
I think I had one of their monster books at once, but I'd never actually played it in the actual setting. And if this was if they had an Osric version of this, I would actually really consider doing. And if you look at who created the project too, Stuart Wieck. So, this has got a lot of potential, but I'm not going to use 5e or OpenD6 or TSL. So, nuts.
Yeah. I was just curious if either one of you had actually played Talos Lanta before. Because it is my problem with Talos Lanta is the same thing, the same problem I have with lots of games that have a lot of background. No one player can really read all that material and really be converse enough.
Mm.
So it's like there's a large buy-in, if you will.
Yep.
And that I've always said that's a problem. It's like, you know, and then as a game master, it's like, well, how do, you know, trying to create adventures in that world really requires you to have, like, to know everything. Whereas, and I think that's what people don't get. It's like in a D&D game where there's like this weird generic fantasy, if you will, you can kind of fudge it a lot.
Yep.
A wizard did it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, your goblins are purple. No one's going to blink an eye. Right. But yeah, when you get one of these much more detailed settings, in order to get your full value out of that, everybody's got to have at least... probably got to read at least a 5 to 10 page primer. And the GM, well, they got a lot of heavy lifting to do because they need to know what's in that primer plus what's behind the primer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, don't get me wrong. I mean, the old Talislanta stuff was fun to read, you know? Okay. And I mean, when you read the first edition I had, there was a lot of material in there. You're like, oh, hey, you know, that there's a lot of, you read it and there's like a lot of possible adventure hooks, if you will, in that material. Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh man, it's just like the way their game system is, it's like you wanted the characters to be more higher level to do any of that. So it's almost like with the way it's written, I would have preferred to do something like a Savage World setting, I mean, system for it, where, you know, or just assume everyone's going to be higher level or higher capability than like starting characters. That's the only way out. What was it?
Oh, go on. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, I was just saying that's the only way I could imagine having enough fun with the material that the source provided. Otherwise, you're just like, what low-level adventures are we doing? Oh, we're protecting a caravan in the desert. You know, some fairly standard fare for this really complex game world. Kind of.
Okay. Well, since you guys, Jeff, you're the only one that's actually played with Talislanta anymore. What's the Cole's Notes version of this world? Like, what makes it special compared to, say, another D&D adventure anyway?
Mostly it has to do with the number of races and the fact that there are really no standard people.
Okay.
No, I mean, really, I mean, the original tagline, no elves, was the original tagline when they sold it. And it is true that there are no elves per se, but there's a lot of elf-like people.
Oh, off-elves is what you're saying, like the off-brand.
Well, I mean, they're not really elves per se, but there's a lot of creatures that are very almost fey-like in a way, and fairies, and then, of course, you just have various other things, and there's a lot of humans but not humans kind of people. Gotcha. If that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, because especially in the original system, there was like nationality / races bound with classes, which was interesting in itself because, you know, you'd have the rat guy fighter wouldn't be equal to the thrall warrior in fighting capability, if that makes any sense.
Nah, I think it makes enough sense.
Yeah, the thrall guys were interesting, is that they all looked alike. They were like some sort of wizard hybrid creation. And so they all had the same exact appearance if they were male, same exact appearance if they were female, so they would tattoo themselves to differentiate each other. They would be tattooed from head to toe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Definitely has a certain element to there.
What was that?
Definitely has a certain element to it.
Yeah. Alright.
I don't know. I'd have to know more before I could play with that, but go on.
Yeah, so there's I don't even know how many editions there have been. There's been several. And I think the game system has definitely changed. So, all right. Why don't we go to the next one so we can get into the good stuff today? I just thought this was interesting. This industrial bulkhead terrain for 20mm wargaming. Because it looks like it's cut again from that really thin plywood with a laser cutter.
Oh, yep. Exactly, yeah. Yep.
And I think it looks pretty, but I don't know if I would want to game with it.
I'd be afraid to touch it.
No, actually, that stuff's actually pretty resilient, believe it or not. You know,
it's awesome.
It's thin, but it is awesome. $60 though for their miniature bulkhead terrain set. And then $115 for their standard. And they have photos of what you can build with it. You know, it does look nice, and you know, it does fit in a couple of boxes, which is nice when they do the bulk set. I don't know. It's just pretty stuff.
Yeah.
And then if you really get into it, if you had this stuff, some people I know would paint it.
Oh, yeah.
So.
But what I do kind of like is that this is actually a dungeon you can build with 3D. Mm. That'll give full credit for, where you can actually set it up as a 3D dungeon. Unfortunately, that means it must take an arm and a leg, you know, a good chunk of time to actually set up, though.
No. And I mean, this is why it's mostly for war games, but still, it's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, all this stuff was real. I mean, that. I love these things because it's, you know, since it's that really thin plywood, it's fairly lightweight. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Yeah.
And like I said, it looks pretty.
Yeah.
But I won't be using it any day soon.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same boat.
All right. Oh, I don't even. Just what we. Here we go. Heroic Fantasy and Barbarian Conquerors Collection, a pair of supplements supporting heroic and pulp fantasy gaming with new classes, magic, spells, monsters, and more. They've already reached their goal. They were asking $15,000, and people have already shelled out $22,000.
Well, congratulations.
So.
Yeah, I'm just looking over here. A new spell system, new Sumerian Saga, spell slinging, over 155 spells. What's the engine they use? Just kind of curious.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. Oh, they use the Adventure Conqueror King system.
Yeah. So there you go.
So, which I think... I think that's OSR based, but I think it's got its own tweaks. And yeah, they're fairly extensive, if I remember right.
Yeah. Well, for $25, you can get pretty much everything you need.
Yep.
So,
and it does have a John Carter of Mars feel for the second half of the sucker, because for the world of Kahu, whereas a catalog of super scientific technology, 45 new monsters, the Gazeter, as well as like various bugmen, cultists, deep one hybrids.
Yeah, definitely so, very. Yeah, yeah. Actually, this. Yeah, they actually mentioned that the second is Sword and Planet, at Great Burrows Barsoom. So.
Yep.
Which is kind
of
cool.
Looks kind of fun. I'm almost tempted to pick it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, it looks like that's just the PDF. $25, Jeff, for the print on demand, the handbook. Huh? Sneak preview. Yeah. I don't know. Could be interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Next up, I want to give a little talk about. There's two Kickstarters that Pinnacle's actually doing, and they're both based off of graphic novels. And both of them have reached their goal. They were only asking $5,000 on each Kickstarter. One was Fear Agent for Savage Worlds, and the other was The Goon. For Savage Worlds. They're both based off of, obviously, Fear Agent graphic novels for Fear Agent, and The Goon for Goon. The Goon.
The classics.
I haven't read either one of these.
Yeah, I'm actually not familiar, series. So I can't actually talk about them. Have you read either one?
I'm familiar with The Goon. I'm not familiar with The Fear Agent. So, long story short, it's The Goon has like a real film noir thing where a guy plays essentially a goon. You know, one of these tough guys in the middle of the 30s, I believe it is.
Yeah.
So I'm having trouble finding the length, though. Shoot.
For which? The Goon?
Oh, for The Goon.
Oh.
If you go to the Fear Agent one, there's one just a little down in the Fear Agent page.
There it is. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. So.
Yeah.
It says zombie noir for The Goon.
That's pretty much the long and the short of it. You're basically playing a tough guy in essentially a noir novel with strangeness and things, you know, things in zombies and also other weird and wacky things.
Yeah.
They end up having to fight there. And because you're a tough guy, it's the only reason you survive more often than not, or The Goon does. So it's definitely a fun thing. I don't know if I'd want to actually play in the system, but
I think
this is the one that Mike Maglia did, didn't it? It's been a while.
I'm not really sure.
No, my mistake.
Yeah, and then Fear Agent is kind of a pulp sci-fi one with strangeness. The way they describe it is more twists and turns than an episode of The Twilight Zone. Wow. So.
That's awesome because, well, recently I've been doing a marathon of The Twilight Zone.
It's on Netflix.
And it's original. More than that, man. It's, you know how the old joke is The Simpsons did it? I actually mm-hmm. would argue that anything involving sci-fi is a good chance that Twilight Zone did it first.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I can see that.
I've been going through all the different episodes. I'm going, hey, that's that plot from that movie like a year ago. You know,
no, they. You know, The Twilight Zone was very poignant about a lot of things. And yep. I was watching, I don't know what the name of the episode was, but you watch some of that stuff and you're like, wow, they were talking about stuff that, it's weird, you watch the old black and whites and you swear they're talking about stuff that's happening today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of frightening.
My favorite was the one involving the alien invasion. Where the neighbors turn on each other.
And the two aliens are there. Was that it happened on Mulberry Street or something like that?
Yes, it happened on Mulberry Street or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And it just, you wanna, obviously it's in to communism, but.
Yeah. You know what's really crazy about that one? That was actually the actual like play, if you will, for that was actually part of one of my English literature classes.
I can believe it.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was actually, like, in the book for English.
That's insane.
Cool.
So, yeah, I always thought that was kind of cool. I used to have a subscription to the old Twilight Zone magazine, which was just, like, a story anthology.
Yeah, but still, man. Like, part of the fun of watching the old episodes is saying, hey, I know that guy. Oh, they did this. Like, when I was watching The Graveyard, which is one of these old Western ones, and they have this guy who's acting as a gambler in the back, and it literally was one of the first roles that Leif Van Cleef ever played. Or as better known as the Bad from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
And if you lived in the 80s, you remember him trying to be a ninja.
Yep.
I've seen every episode, man.
From Angel Eyes to Ninja.
Yep, there you go. Yeah. And of course, let's face it, there's at least, what, like three episodes with William Shatner?
I've seen the one where the monkeys on the plane tearing it apart, the gremlin, which essentially is a guy in a gorilla costume.
Yeah, Terror at 10,000 Feet.
Yeah.
And then there's the one where, I think that maybe there was only two, but it seems like there was more. There was one where him and his fiance drive into a town, and they go to the diner, and there's this little nickel, like, you put a nickel in, you ask a question, you turn the thing, and it prints out a little piece of tape, and it gives you, you know, like, answers to things. And they're, like, kind of being terrorized / being held hostage by this little machine.
It's awesome.
So.
Okay, but.
We digress.
Yes. Finally.
Yeah. So next up we have Faith, the sci-fi RPG core book and miniatures. I guess there was a, Faith is a card game, and so now there's an RPG based on that card game. The $32 for the digital, the US, for the digital core rulebook, NPC deck, and gear deck. So I guess whatever game they're using, there's decks involved, maybe.
Yep.
I've never played the card game. Either one of you?
Sorry, man, I haven't.
No, I asked.
Never heard of it.
Yes, I mean, that's where I'm at with this one. I'm not familiar with it. It's probably going to make its goal. It's the translation to the U.S. is almost $44,000. They're almost at $43,000, so they're very likely. They have 16 days to go. It looks interesting. I just don't know if I, again, it's one of those ones where I don't know if I would have, it's going to give me enough, if I'm going to have enough buy-in to do it. You know, if it's going to be cost me too much.
I think there isn't actually a card game it's based on. I think it uses cards as its core mechanic.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, this is the second edition of the rules. Okay.
Yep. Second
okay.
edition of the rules.
I thought there was a card game. All right. I'm not familiar with this at all. Sorry, folks.
See anything about it. Though, so.
Yeah.
But, I'm. I guess if you know, if everybody was really invested in the setting.
I guess they won a silver Emmy in 2015, so we obviously talked about it or guessed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think this, like a neat concept. Yeah, this is probably one of the ones I was like, I have no idea what this is. You know, when we were, when I played the infamous, you know, guessing game for the Ennies.
Well, and faith is a kind of a, can be a misleading term, so people might have kind of, especially English-speaking people, might have passed it over for whatever reason, so, although that looks like it doesn't have anything absolutely to do with the actual setting, so.
Yeah,
because it feels like it's a space opera, it feels like, just
mm-hmm.
with supernatural forces, it feels like a less ethical version of Star Trek in a lot of ways. Because you're going out there freebooting up the galaxies, but you got to deal with all these colossal, powerful entities as you go along your way.
Hmm.
And there's also mystic believers, which is probably where they get the faith concept. Okay, well, it's neat. I don't know. I have to think about it a little more.
Yeah. All right, so next up we have Dungeons and Delvers, a fun and simple tabletop RPG for kids and adults alike. It was only asking $1,000. It's reached its goal. And the basic mechanic that they have seems pretty easy. If that makes any sense.
No, it looks fun. It looks simplified, and it's seems appropriate for the market they're trying to hit, which is basically the young ones.
Yeah.
And you can play a frogman, so that's always a plus in my book.
Hey, who doesn't want to be a frogman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to be a frogman wizard. So,
yeah.
It does seem very simple, because I mean, I know that playing with kids is always a tough one, especially depending on what their age is. I mean, don't get me wrong, when I was playing D&D in the early days, I think we've talked about this before, because of all of the stuff that Eloy LaSanta has written, obviously for Third Eyed Games, you know, and it's always a tough, that's always a tough sell. It's like, oh God, trying to play with your kids, or trying to play with young kids, especially if they're not people who, like, when I was obviously in the third and fourth grade, it's like, you know, you couldn't keep my hands off, you know, the old red box D&D. Of course, that, relatively speaking, that was fairly simple.
It is, actually. It is. Yeah. And it's very well written, too. I went back and read it not too long ago, and it's actually very well written.
Yeah. I still have the rule cyclopedia in PDF format from one bookshelf. Very useful, because there's a lot of assumptions in there about how the game was played at that point that to this day amazes me, because it's like, you know, they always assumed that once you reached a certain level you were going to get more political. So,
well, it's also on top of that, man, that's where I got my chip against Bargle. I will take him out one day.
All right, so now we have this is a weird one. I don't know how to pronounce this. Dehoven?
Oh, yeah.
New RPG game from Higher Grounds. Join the hunt and fight the void in this modern science fiction... Science fantasy. Sorry, I always say science... When I see science... I always say science fiction instead of science fantasy. Science fantasy tabletop RPG. They're looking for about $20 for the core book. In PDF format.
They've almost got their goal, too. They've got a little ways to go. Although, I mean, if they're going to be producing those kind of books, that's a really low goal for producing hardcover books.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're doing print-on-demand.
I hope so for their sake, man, because $1,500 for hardcovers?
Yeah.
It's possible, but it's going to be ugly. And I hope it's a labor of love, that's all I'm saying.
I'm going to say yes. I would almost say probably most of these are.
I think it's safe to assume that.
Yeah,
because they've only actually got 32 backers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now they're talking about producing less than 50 of these things.
And I guess here's my... I'm going to say something, and I don't mean this to sound crass to anybody, especially people who love their games. But 50 copies of anything in the gaming universe is small. It's such a niche market at that point. You're really splitting hairs, because it's like, well, that means that only how many people are ever going to play your game? Yeah. And I don't mean that in a negative way. Absolutely not. I mean, I love finding really weird RPGs and owning them, even if I never play them.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree there.
I actually have a copy of a few games like that.
Yep.
You know.
I just wonder if they price themselves at the right place for me, because they're talking about producing the hardcover at $35. Now, a 352-page hardcover. I was considering doing some printing myself a couple of years ago, and I know that the price point on even like a, you know, 120-page softcover was like $9 or $10.
Yeah.
So 350-page hardcover, they can't be making any money on that, if they make any money at all.
Yeah. It's they probably didn't do it correctly. All right. Why don't we get into the last three Kickstarters so we can actually talk about some fun stuff?
Yes. Sure. There we go.
All right. So, Devil's Run role playing game. Apparently, it is based on a post apocalyptic board game called Devil's Run.
I have not heard of it, but okay.
It is a, I guess there is a Savage World license on it. Possibly. Licensed product. I guess there's two.
Oh, yeah, you can get the Savage Worlds version of it, yep.
Yeah, the other one is using something called Tricore, which I'm not familiar with. I mean, it kind of has a very, because obviously it's some sort of weird motoring mayhem, has a definite Mad Max feel.
Yeah, yep. I'm getting serious vibes of Mad Max or the old Joe Deaver books, Freeway Warrior, which is pretty much a parody of this entire thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, in their first paragraph, they mentioned George Miller. So, yeah, this is definitely Mad Max, the role-playing game.
Yeah. So, and for the PDF core rulebook, about $17. That's not bad. This is one of those games I would probably just get as a PDF just to own it.
I could see that, yeah.
You know, not that I'm going to, but they got, I'd say
they're about a third of the way through.
Yeah, they got 26 days to go. So that's not that bad. Now comes, what was it?
Oh, it looks neat, that's for sure.
Well, here's one that I think is very interesting, by the way, for a Kickstarter. The Dungeon Crawl Classics Linkmar.
Oh, it's, man.
They have raised $85,000 US.
That doesn't, and they've got 22 days to go, so that doesn't even surprise me, though.
The only problem I have with them doing this Kickstarter, where the fuck is my Mutant Call Classics?
You are not the only person asking that question.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I like Linkmar. I think it's fun, and God knows it's literally laid the foundation for most D&D.
You know, that's the crazy thing, is that, you know, people are getting that because of that, and I'm sure, I don't know, it's one of those things where you wonder if this supplement, even though it's kind of a official license, people aren't going to feel as slightly derivative once they get it.
Well, dude, what are you going to put in the book that's going to be different from the standard Dungeon Crawl Classics?
Yeah.
Maybe the old maps, maybe a few of the gods listings here. Maybe you'll be able to play a ghoul, which are those weird nomadic races with see-through skin. But even though, you know, it's very much a product of its time, but its time was basically back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Well, I think, again, a lot of this is just going to be nostalgia value and just to have something that has a Linkmar on it.
I'm not going to argue there.
You know, and it's if you get it, the complete thing, I guess it's a box set.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a box set for $100 or $50. Okay,
so now to quote the legendary line, what's in the box?
The Compendium of Secret Knowledge, Rules Options for DCC Linkmar, The Judge's Guide to, I don't even know how to pronounce that,
Nuon.
And then obviously there's information about Linkmar, and then there's an adventure, No Small Crimes in Linkmar. So there you go.
Yeah, and I recognize that god. Ningabos.
Yeah.
Mm.
So there you go. So
I actually just went back and read some of his stuff recently, but yeah, it's not something I need. It seems pretty cool if you're looking for a nice, a kind of cool retro setting, though.
Yeah, but to be fair, Dungeon Crawl Chaotic does work well with Langmar for one reason only. If you've ever read the first few novels, it really does feel like Fantasy Vietnam, which is what Dungeon Crawl Classic does really well.
Fantasy Vietnam?
Okay.
Yeah. As in, you got your sword, you got your weapon, you're probably going to die, and it's going to be an incredibly harsh environment so you go fight the goblins and orcs. Unless you're a dirty bastard and get all the loot.
Well, I know some players that are dirty bastards, so...
Well, I guess this is it all, doesn't it?
Yep. All right, last up, last Kickstarter. The Arcanus 5th Edition RPG. Arcanus is the world of Shattered Empires is back and updated for 5th Edition. So, I don't know. Either one of you ever played Arcanus, the world of Shattered Empires?
I don't know that the name seems familiar, but after that, no idea.
Looks like they have a very Roman feel to some of these. At least one of the groups. You know.
Yep.
Yeah, very that, and I guess some Celtic related stuff.
I was just going to say some Celtic. Yep.
So, at which point I would say, I'll play Weird Wars Rome. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I jest.
It's a cool thing. It looks really good. The art is gorgeous.
Yeah. No.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I need another setting, but if you're looking for one, or if you're looking to update your Arcanus to 5e, this is certainly
this
and $50 for that for a 400 page plus book is a good deal, actually. That's the print version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I mean, that's it. So, wow, that was a lot of Kickstarters.
It was.
You know, just all that shit just popped out. And, of course, we do want to do a quick shout-out to Bundle of Holding.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The two new ones from this for this week are the Advanced Fighting Fantasy, which is based on the old... solo play novels from the 80s. The core bundle is $7.95, and I think to get the extra books added on is 1983 the last time I looked. So I've heard good things about the Advanced Fighting Fantasy. I think the original creator of the Fighting Fantasy books, Steve Jackson, is actually working on these, so it's got a certain pedigree to it anyway, and this is a good chance to check it out if you like.
Yep, and plus it's like, this is like serious nostalgia candy for me because I grew up on these books. Before I knew D&D, I knew Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really fun just looking at what they actually portray.
Yeah, I don't think I ever dealt with those books. For me, it was always the old Choose Your Own Adventure novels.
Yep.
Yeah, so. And then the other bag of holding.
Yeah, it's Heavy Gear, the non-anime mecha role-playing game. The starter collection is $11.95, and that nets you... And this is for the third edition of the rules. Gets you 5 books, and I think another... what is it? Looks like almost 23... About 23 bucks gets you an extra handful of books. Looks like about another 9 books or so. So if you're looking to get into a mecha RPG, again... Great way to do it. All these PDFs, so you can't find a better deal on them than that.
Why not?
All right. So let's get into the actual news, the non-news topics that we have, which is first one up is our changing preferences in gaming, and this can actually kind of go a long way. But I appreciate the little outline because that actually has some stuff. Probably, yeah. I would say, first off, let's kind of go round table and say what is the biggest change in gaming that we've done from when we started to now. And I think for myself, length of the gaming session. I used to game, as a child, we used to game 6, 12 hours.
Yes.
Now it's like 4, if I'm lucky. 3 to 4. Yeah. Does that sound about right for most people nowadays?
Now, as an adult? Is that a preference? Is that a preference, or is that a reality of being an adult?
You know, I think it's a preference change. And some of it might be related because I'm an adult now. But I do think it's a preference change. I think that, especially in the old days, adventures used to just drag on for 6 to 12 hours because we could.
Yeah.
And nowadays, it's like, I don't want them to drag out that long. I mean, I don't mind a good dungeon delve, but my dungeon delve, you know how we've had Kickstarters where they have these mega dungeons? I don't effing want to do that ever again. That's a preference change.
Yep.
So.
I don't blame you for that. Dungeon hack is a pain in the tooski sometimes. You don't do, you know, if you're not in the right mindset, it's not going to be fun. It's as simple as that.
No. Yep. All right. Who's up next?
Chris?
Not sure. If I had to say anything, it is, I think I've become more and more minimalist as time progresses when it comes to my rule sets.
Mm.
Like, I used to be a lot more crunchy when it comes to my rule concepts here. I grew up on D&D, and then, just like every other battered gamer, played Rifts and wanted desperately to fix Rifts.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never played Rifts, but I did play Rollmaster.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you had the equivalency there.
Yeah.
Heck, it's one of the reasons I wrote Dark Revelations, the role-playing game, was to try to make a D20 Rifts that made sense. Which I'm still doing nowadays. And trust me, that was no small feat. Heck, it took a long time to make it work properly. And now I'm at the point where I'm playing more and more narrative games, like Cartoon Action Hour, or the Apocalypse Engine, or Fate, or Fiasco, even.
Yeah.
Where the rules are actually simplified.
Well, I'm still playing some stuff with crunch. I would say Savage World still has some crunch, but it's definitely a hell of a lot more simplified than like D&D. And it's now my, pretty much my game of choice. My game engine of choice, I guess, is a better way to describe Savage Worlds. You know, I mean, just because it's like, you know, as a game master, it especially from a game master perspective, it's so much easier to do adventures.
Heck, you know, even D&D is D&D anymore. Like, their fifth edition is easily the most fluffiest of the versions they've ever done, where they've really tried to streamline the rules to some degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true, but it's still, I don't know, it's still like, whatever. I mean, it's like,
still crunchy.
Well, it definitely, this is where, like, having had games with hit points and playing Savage Worlds where there are no hit points, I almost prefer games with no hit points, or if there are hit points, it's similar enough to everything that's already out there. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, humans have roughly around the same hit points no matter what. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
It does indeed.
So.
I think for me, my big thing was to go from like a high concept games to more of the micro focus games. So, you know, I used to think it would be a lot of fun to run these really lengthy, detailed adventures and campaigns that had a lot of intrigue and depth to them. But then as I got older, I realized that, you know, getting everyone to get to that point is really hard and frequently not necessarily worth it. You can kind of organically build that, but I definitely kind of moved towards a smaller scope look at my games, and then if they expand from there, that's great, but it's not something I push for. It's much more of a, you guys want to go on a dungeon adventure, and then you meet this guy along the way or whatever, and then that kind of builds on that, and that builds on that, so on.
Yeah, I agree. Like, one of the things I've been doing a lot more when it comes to my own personal design is, instead of building this huge epic campaign that'll last for years, I usually like a three-part, beginning, middle, end. It lasts about 3 sessions. And then if there people liked it, then you go on to the next adventure, which is tied into the first one. So you're kind of almost building with building blocks. And that way, if it gets cut short, you still have a definite ending.
Yeah,
yeah, that's good. I like that. Well, I'm just knocking my mouse around.
No worries.
Another one was, you know, it's... I know that I found that I was never a huge fan of really big player counts. I've heard of some people running like 16 player games.
Oh, back in the day,
I remember
that. I did. I want to say it was an 8 or 12 player game once. I think it was 8 player game, and it took us. It was a 12-hour session, and it was brutal even then. And yeah, I much prefer 3 to 5, 5 at the most, because even that starts to get a lot of downtime for the, you know, tail end Charlie.
Yeah, I would say for me normally about 6. And I only say 6 for is kind of my max, and I can handle 6, and I kind of like 6 because usually with adults, one person almost always can't make it.
True.
So you have like a group of 6. If 6 show up, you're still okay. But if like 2 can't make it, you have 5 people, and you can still 4 people, and you can still play.
True.
No,
that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say the third game I ever played was one of those abominations, where I think we had like 10 to 12 people around the table for Dragonlance Saga, and it was a saga wreck.
Oh my goodness.
It was right in the middle of second edition era, where I was going through characters like water, but there was a couple of people that kept their characters long. It went from level 5 to level like 16 or so. And yeah, it was fun, neat, never doing it again.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. Just the number, you know. I don't like large groups. I think the largest I've ever played with had to be on about 15 people, I think. And it was weird because, and I think when I played that, I realized that large groups were out. I mean, this was in the 80s, because whatever the adventure was, it was like almost like we all had characters, and there's like this mass battle kind of going on, and the problem was, is it just took forever to do anything, you know?
Yep.
So in today's world, half the party would be on their phones or laptops or tablets or something.
Yep.
And I think that's the other change. It's like, because of the way technology's changed, I think our preference have changed to smaller groups so that we can focus on the fewest number of people.
Yeah. I can definitely feel a lot more story-oriented now, especially compared to some of the earlier modules. But if I had to say the single biggest rule that I've really enjoyed, that I gave the conclusion a couple of weeks ago, I don't like adding and subtracting modifiers in the middle of combat. Not the way I used to. Because you always forget one or the other or this thing. Which is why I was so damn impressed by the 5th edition advantage-disadvantage system. Because then you're not playing, you know, doing calculations on the fly. You know, yeah, it's relatively easy, +2, -2, but when you're, when you basically have to create an Excel chart to say, I'm using that, 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 and that, to make sure you keep your numbers straight.
I think... I'm on the other side of that myself.
Oh?
I do not like the advantage-disadvantage mechanic. I feel like it's not a bonus, because you're still perfectly capable of rolling 2 failures. Whereas giving someone a static bonus of +2 or +3 to hit is actually an actual bonus to them. So they're not the same thing, and I don't think you can... For my games, I would never use them as a bonus. And I think that it's... To me, it's not something I enjoy. I'd much rather do bonuses, +2 for cover, +2 for flanking... So that's +4. You're ready to rock.
Well, as long as the bonuses are relatively minor, it's actually pretty good. It's when you get into adding this bonus, that bonus, and the other bonus, you start getting the stacking effect.
Hey. I used to play Rollmaster where we had calculators all the time next to us.
I understand.
I bet.
It's like, hey, my OB is +53. What's their defensive bonus? 22? Okay. And I'm going to roll these percentile dice. 96. That's open-ended. Roll again. Nice. What? You think that's funny? It's true.
No, yeah. I know it's true, but that's why it's funny.
Oh, hey. But, yeah. I got a 35E critical on my opponent. Crush critical. What's let me roll on the E crush. What? He's flattened? What was that?
I think that 5e has some interesting concepts in it, but like I said, I really the advantage disadvantage die mechanic has not really convinced me, because that's actually in Pathfinder. One of the adventure paths I was running had creatures in it that used that same mechanic. They were like a bad luck creature. So when they were around you, you actually rolled 2d20 and took the lower of them.
No.
And so, you know, that mechanic was actually, I saw that in Pathfinder, and that was one of the early Pathfinder modules, the fire one. I can't remember the name of it.
City of Brass?
Nope.
Oh, before that.
It's before that. It's, I can't remember the name of it now. It's all set with gin, and it's set in the deep into the continent. You're fighting ancient gin.
That is the one that eventually you end up in the City of Brass. I forget what the hell it's called.
It's like a Path of Fire or something like that.
I can't quite remember. Yeah, I have that adventure path. I've just never played it.
Legacy of Fire.
Yep. Legacy of Fire. There we go. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's an interesting mechanic. For me, I would never use it as a replacement for bonuses or negatives against a player.
I got one for you guys.
All right.
Collecting crap? Well, think about it. Like, when you play the old dungeon hack things, you will literally grab everything that isn't nailed down because you want to maximize your money and treasure value.
Yeah, I guess. And
you That's collect true. This, that, and the other thing, and you go to the dungeon or the adventure and you try to get everything out there. As I get older and older, I'm noticing I want less stuff on my character when it comes to items, even though I'm a bit of a pack rat at heart when it comes to dungeoning.
Another one I've seen is looting the bodies. For me, you know, when I was a kid, it was just, you know, you loot the bodies, and nowadays I'm like, hold on a second here. Let's think about what we're doing from kind of a slightly less mercenary point of view. We are stealing all this stuff off this person or thing. In some instances, it's fine, but when you get into like contemporary worlds or even futuristic worlds, it gets a little weird, I think.
Well, it gets weird because all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to collect all their swords and all their spears, and we're going to sell them. You know, it's just like, really?
Yep.
Who wants an orc spear?
That too.
Nobody. You know, kind of thing.
Yep, that too.
So, no, I've seen it all. I mean, and it's weird. That's why, especially in D&D, I never understood the alignment system, because at that point you're like, well, most good players wouldn't be collecting that stuff and selling it and having the profits off of that. They would probably just like, we've killed the evil things, we're good.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, I'm not saying good people aren't mercenary, because that's a misnomer, but it's just weird, you know, the way everything plays out. I don't get it. So,
well, and that's where the murder hobos moniker comes from. You know, they kill you and steal your stuff. Oh wait, I'm the one killing people or things and stealing their stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Yeah, so. And well, you can rationalize it to some degree. It's still kind of creepy when you think about it.
Yes, it is.
Okay, I got a question for you guys.
All right.
What game did you originally hate that you've softened on over the years?
And obviously the converse of that, too.
Yes. What game did you absolutely love as a kid that you now can't stand?
Okay. Probably the original game that I hated that I softened on first off, you understand, I was a young kid, barely in the sixth grade, and I'd only ever really played D&D. And a buddy of mine that I was going to school with was trying to introduce me to Traveler, and I really wasn't ready to have it.
Okay.
And, you know, years later, it's like, I love Traveler. You know, I mean, especially the little black book edition that he was trying to force me to play back then.
Well, dude, it's not fantasy, and you've never played anything but fantasy before.
No, I understand that, I'm just saying, but that was an original game that I really couldn't stand. It's like I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And, you know, you didn't say I had to have a logical reason for hating it.
Oh, no, quite the opposite, man.
And then, on the opposite end of the spectrum, Champions.
Oh.
You know, I love Champions, but it's not a game I ever want to play ever again.
Fair enough.
You know, and especially, I don't know, the latest editions haven't done anything for me either. That's another one of those games that if you ever played the original, like first or second edition, or first or second edition printing or whatever the hell you want to call it, the game system was really kind of, it was complicated, but it was fairly simple, believe it or not.
It was consistent.
I wouldn't say consistent. It had issues, but,
okay.
You know, that was one of those games that back then I could create characters without the book because I memorized all the point costs for everything.
Oh, okay.
You know,
wow, okay.
Well, you know, it was just easy back then. A lot of things were very easy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, because it couldn't emulate everything like everybody wanted, there were a lot of complaints. Well, it wasn't designed to it said you could, but it really couldn't. And so now, you know, once you had the 4th edition, the 5th edition, and clearly, obviously, even the 6th edition, a lot of the changes that they've made to the game is to support, like, I want to create, you know, this telescopic lens in the rules, and what's the point cost for that? Who gives a shit? You know, I mean, that's where I've gotten with that. So,
I want to create a flying mole man who can shoot lasers, but only when he's in sunlight, and has a vulnerability to, exactly. And it's like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's what happened is it went really crazy.
Yeah.
And
it is pretty crazy. I played 5e, and it's pretty nuts.
Yeah, I mean, you look at even, we'll take even classic villains, like, you know, and, you know, in Champions they had Mechanon, which was kind of an Ultron clone, if you will. And it's like through the editions you see how he's changed, and he's just like, he's gotten more and more complex for no real reason other than they wanted to make him more and more complex and be the baddest villain on the planet, basically.
Yeah.
So. All right, next person.
So the one I hated as a kid and have definitely softened on would probably be the Marvel Superhero System. As a kid, I didn't like it because it was fairly limited in its scope, and I've kind of come to appreciate that, and would actually really enjoy running it again or playing it again. It's a fun game. I think they did a good job of kind of capturing the comic book feel of it, for superheroes. And the game that that I liked as a kid but no longer would be Call of Cthulhu. Call of Cthulhu, I played a couple times and didn't really enjoy any of the times I played it, running it or playing it.
I can see that.
I think it's the futility of the characters. Yeah. You end up with these with your, you know, your characters know it's like, okay, I'm either going to be insane or die a horrible, horrible death.
You build a character optimized for speed, and you hope you run away from everything using roller skates.
Well, and I mean, then think about the fundamental idea of that. So you're playing a hero whose main objective is to run away from everything.
Yep.
I don't know how other people define hero, but that doesn't sound like a very fun hero to play.
Yeah, unless you're playing Braves or Robin, and that's just more of a joke character at best.
Yeah, it's one of those things like, I'm not certain that I'm the person to run or play in this. Other people seem to love it. That's fantastic. It's not for me.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, mine's going to be kind of weird. The one that I softened on, but not for the reason you think, would be Modern D20 of all things. Not for the game itself. I actually find some flaws there. But the more I look at what they did, the more I respect the rules they made. Like, I kind of respect their purchase values instead of having the huge masses of money which you buy all sorts of crazy crap with. Or why they tried to do vehicle rules a certain way, or why they use proficiencies here. Like, I don't think I'll ever play a game, but I do respect some of the things they opened up for. And how it eventually led to Star Wars Saga, which is a lot better game using the base model. As for the one that I've soured on pretty hard, I think it's safe to assume it's Rifts.
Oh.
I was a diehard fanboy for the longest time. But between the rules and the politics, it just... let's just say I had to switch gear or something fierce after a certain point. I still have my books. They're still good for conceptions and ideas, but I doubt I'll play Rifts again. Except possibly maybe the Savage World version, but that's going to be a while for now.
All right. I think we're going to close that topic for this, because we're actually running long. It was the Kickstarters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So we'll get to topic two, which is Session Zero, or pre-planning your game with your players. Now, have either one of you actually done this?
Yes, actually.
Okay. No, I ask because it's a serious question. I would have to say not. I would probably say I've applied some of the concept of Session Zero without actually having a Session Zero.
Because I'm in the same boat.
You know, I think I've talked to players about certain things before we started playing, but I didn't have like a session where everyone got together and we discussed all these things.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense.
You know, and it is interesting because, God, I forget the name of the damn Dawn of Worlds. That's what it's called. There is an actual, I want to call it a game because it's sort of a game, but there's this whole, a long, long time ago, there was this thing I ran across. It was called Dawn of Worlds. I've never used it, but the only reason Session Zero always brings it up, this concept always comes up when I think of Session Zero, where the players would come together and, you know, the game master would outline, draw the continent or whatever outline. And then through the Dawn of Worlds, cities and mountains would get placed as the players are basically playing deities.
Oh, wow.
You know, of sorts. You know, they're influencing the world. It's like, oh, here's some mountains. You know, somebody placed some mountains here. It's like someone spends some points on their turn to put elves there. Why are there elves in the mountain? Now you figure it out later, you know?
Yep.
And it was just an interesting concept. I've never done it. I don't know, can you even find it? Let's see.
Well, there's something similar, not something similar out now. There's a game called Microscope out now.
Yeah.
That does kind of a collaborative storytelling, but it's actually world building. Now I have run two different games based off of Microscope sessions. One of them worked fairly well, the other one did not. So it is definitely something that you may have to tweak or refine even after you've built that world.
Yeah, it's a good place to start, what I found as well. But you can easily, one, not follow the rules they lay down because you just start building, period. Or two, you just start go into this feedback loop where you end up charting out everything. And its main advantage is the fact that everybody was involved. It's probably going to be playing the game after the fact. Like, I've heard some darn cool ideas from Microscope. But, and of course, we, with my gaming group online, we did a scheming of what's called Echelon, which they were doing basically a transhuman space adventure. And they basically chart out the entire world, where it's basically Lovecraftian monsters versus plants, and everybody else is in between.
Hmm.
It was kind of different. I'll give them credit for that.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about something like Microscope or, you know, even Dawn of Worlds is that everybody's in on it from the beginning. So everybody has that investment before they even start playing. It's like, oh, there's this aspect of the world that I think is kind of cool, and I'm going to tune that to my character so that I can take advantage of it or explore that more. The bad thing is you can end up with worlds where, you know, vampires are able to walk in daylight and fly and rule the world, and other people are like, well, that's not really what I wanted to play. It's like, well, you were there for the building session.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, that's what ended up happening to ours is that it ended up with this world that had kind of this disjointed, not quite fully baked feel to it. And that ended up giving everybody kind of that feeling that they weren't really like, don't really care about this. So,
yeah. It's almost like you got to decide with an original premise before you go too further.
Yes.
Otherwise, you might be lost in the fiddly bits.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Now, I think we better define what session zero is. Ultimately, it's the session with which you build characters and figure out how the group will fit together before you actually play. This is a great way to avoid a lot of problems before you start. Like, give a quick overview of what you want to do if you're the GM and how the world is set in. What do you want the overlying goals for the characters? And when the players give you that feedback as well, you can write it into the adventure. What game are you using for the basis? Like, a couple of weeks ago, quite a while ago, in a previous episode, we did generic games. And this would be a time when you brought up the generic game and how'd you use it. And yep. Also, how would you get to know each other? Like, I had this great aid that I picked up a while back called Backstory Cards. So, hey, you and you, how do you know each other? Here's a random card. Now write the story. Mm. If you do a liner to it, it adds connective tissue between characters for role-playing purposes, which would be a really awesome thing to do.
I've heard people using magic cards for that. Just buy a whole, 100 magic cards and then pass out a couple to everybody and then use them to create backstories and how they know each other.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Just through the art.
Mm-hmm. Also, this is a good place to decide if you're playing a game with, say, classes or niches. Who has which niche for your characters? Because sometimes you need certain niches filled, and one, somebody's going to decide to play something or something else. This is also a great way to cut to the chase and avoid the ninja in a western problem.
Mm, yep.
Hey, this is what I want to play. This is what I want to play. Why are you building a character that's totally different than what we're playing before we even start? Effect. And then you might have to have a talk with them and say, okay, why do you want to play this character? What do you want to distill? You can't play a ninja, but you can play a sneaky rustler. That has a lot of the same effect. Or something to that effect. Also, this is when you can decide what to ban. Let's say for some reason you don't want to have any warlocks in your D&D campaign. Because you're the heroes, and warlocks are usually involving with demons and devils. Or, I don't want a gunslinger in my campaign because I'm doing low medieval.
Yeah.
And by setting those rules up, like, I always recommend do not try to modify a class unless you guys agree on. It's actually easier to either ban it or allow it. Because then you don't end up going, hi, I built this character, but he sucks. As you guys know. And then, of course, backgrounds and concepts that are interconnected here, as well as what equipment's banned, what abilities are banned, ideas and concepts. And by having a 20 to 30 minute, even if it's just like for 20 minutes or something, doing this will make your game stronger because everybody will be on the same page. Because you can build a game, but if you build a game and none of your players want to play, you've both wasted your time.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's absolutely true. Because, I think this also has to do with you should set expectations for your... players should have certain expectations set at Session Zero. An example of when this happened and then the Game Master turned it into something else was, obviously, we were playing the Hero System. We were doing Fantasy Hero, and the Game Master, we're playing a fantasy game. But no. Everything was fucking time travel. Wait a minute. Mm. I didn't sign up for a time travel game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It would be one thing if... I don't know. I can't even explain it. I know that sounds weird, but I don't want to have time travel in my game if that's not what I originally saw. I came to play a fantasy game. If time travel gets involved at some point later in a game, that's great, but right off the bat, all of a sudden we're time traveling? There's something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a similar experience where I was involved in a Nightbane campaign. I was really looking forward to it, and somehow we ended up in Marvel's Wakanda. Which is totally different than the environment that we signed up for.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
players, fun fact. Surprises suck for parties.
Everybody.
This is... Yeah. Mm. And now, for your characters, if you want surprises, that's fine. Because they're in a fictional story. But if you surprise your players from one thing to another, it doesn't always work out well.
Yeah.
Well, and you have to make sure that everybody wants to be on the page that you're on. We've talked about before about high concept games and making sure that your players, you and your players are playing the same game. Like you said, the time travel thing, if that's not what the party wanted to play, then no one's really having fun, because, I mean, sure, the GM's getting his time travel stuff going, but everybody else is like, well, this isn't really what we wanted to play. And had you known about that beforehand, you could have said, well, can we tone down the time travel a bit, and then, you know, maybe make it so it happens in a couple levels when we got some experience under our belt or something like that.
Something. So. Yeah. It, unfortunately, with this particular individual, everything was either time. That was his big thing. He loved time travel and dimensional shifts. Those were mm-hmm. his things. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's great. Then nobody wants to play your game.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was just that. It was like, nobody was interested in what he wanted to do. And it's like, you know what? That happens. I've done that as yep. Game Master. It's like, there's a game I want to play. Before I even decide to even start doing any work, it's like, hey, is anyone interested in, let's say, Gamma World?
Or World War II GURPS. Right. I had all the books for that. I'm like, nobody I know is going to want to play this game.
Right.
It's very cool. There's all kinds of neat things you can do with it. But, you know, unless everybody else is into history and military history, they're not going to get much out of it.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like I have Weird Wars too. Love mm-hmm. the concept, but I just can't play it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I think a lot of it has to do with exactly that. There's just way too much buy-in. And from my own point of view, it's like, where do you begin gaming? Really, with something like that. So,
I think another important thing is that as the GM, it allows you to, you know, you can be flexible too. And when players say, well, I really want to play like a half troll, you're like, well, it doesn't really fit, but you know what, let me think about it a little bit and maybe we can work something out. And then, you know, you might be able to say, okay, well, I found this half troll race online, let's tweak this and this, and then you can play this, and I think it should work within the setting. But you know, going forward, we might have to revisit this because, you know, you might be stomping over everything and we might need to just, you know, kind of tweak your character a bit. So, I mean, as the GM, you can also be flexible on this too.
Oh, no. The Game Masters can be flexible. I mean, I think that's part of the whole concept of Session Zero. It's like, hey, what do we want to build together?
Yep.
It's kind of the problem. You know, and again, I've done this a little bit, but not in a formal setting.
I usually do it via email.
Yeah.
For my groups. Like, everybody make a character. This is where we're setting it. These are the rules we're going to use. Any questions? I'd like a little backstory. And then when everybody gets together, introduce yourselves and give me a little backstory about why you're hanging around this particular place.
Yep. And also that, well, there's a bit of a side effect to Roll Zero that might not be familiar with. Have you ever been in a group where you're trying to figure out what to play next and nobody can decide on it? What to play next?
Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the one thing where Rule Zero might break down. Is, like, I was involved in another gaming group a while back, and one person, everybody brought their own pet game, so we always played D&D because nobody else could agree on anything.
Yeah, and luckily, I think with most of the groups I've played with, usually one person's interested in running, and the other players are like, huh, you want to play champions. Okay, I could deal with some superheroes for a while. That's usually the way that pans out, where, you know, if so, that said, there's other games where, I'm not going to lie, I mean, you bring something, I don't know,
at least with the people. One from the Macho Women with Guns?
Yeah.
You bring Macho Women with Guns and people might... It's like, I don't know why I want to play that.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure. Imagine there won't be too many female gamers at that table.
I wouldn't even make that generalization. It might be one of those things like, I don't know if I want to play an 80s action movie game kind of thing. So, but yeah.
Or
again, like,
it'd be like if I wanted to bring Reichstar to the table. But you know, neither one of you guys have heard of that one.
That one's no idea.
Reichstar. I don't
Reichstar.
Recognize it.
Like Reichstar.
Oh, good lord. Okay, now that you've said that, now it's hitting a nerve.
Yeah, exactly.
What are we talking, Nazis in space?
Yes. Literally. The whole premise was, is what would happen if Germany won World War II, And it takes place in like 2036 or 2066 or something bizarre like that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, the revolution against the government, you know, the regime is finally really taking hold in that period of time. After space explorations happen, after first contact with an alien species has happened, I think, too. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the rule system was horrible.
I can believe it.
Of course.
So. You know. I only bring that game up because I bought it because it was such a weird oddity. It's like, I have to own this.
Mm-hmm. Been there, done that many times.
And the funny thing is I remember telling someone I owned it, and he's like, that's impossible. That was never published. I'm holding the physical copy, pal. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. No, I actually had someone tell me that it was never published, and I'm like, that's weird. Funny. I have a copy in my hot little hand here. I think it's been published.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, that's, I think, Session Zero, I mean, it certainly can help to smooth out a lot of those issues. You know, one of the things is that as players, you know, if a GM comes charging in with this high concept, and I've had this before, where they're like, okay, so you guys are going to be dimension hopping, you know, D&D adventurers, and you're going to be, you know, like fish out of water, and everybody's like, that, I guess, sounds okay. And so you have to be sometimes you have to be kind of the buzzkill, and like, that's not really what I want to play. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. I mean, I know it sounds like a lot of fun to run for you, but the rest of us are kind of like, not so much.
Yeah, and there also might be specific rules for your game. Like, we're playing Deadlands. Okay, are you playing the North or South? Are you playing a multicultural party? Are you going to handle the South? Because that's a hell of a can of worms, almost as much as playing Nazis.
Yeah.
And are you going to be dealing more with the supernatural aspects, or are you going to try to keep it more of a straight Western with a few weird elements thrown in for good measure? Is anybody going to be harrowed? Yeah. And questions like that, if you can answer them before you start, it's going to allow consistency among your players, so they're not going to be too badly sidelined. They're going to probably have a better time.
Yeah. Well, they'll know what kind of characters to build, too. You know, if they know that their characters have... My example would be this classified game I'm running. I told the characters that, you know, it's going to be somewhere between, like, Archer and...
That's just funny in itself.
It's... Archer and Lacare, kind of halfway between there. So there will be some gunplay, but not everybody's going to necessarily walk away from it. They'll probably survive, but they may not walk away from it. And so I want to make sure that they understand that they understood that the games, you know, I'm not going to, you know, they're not just going to get hit with a bullet and walk away. And so, you know, setting that expectation going in, they're like, okay, well, should I get some Kevlar? I'm like, well, if you don't want to get shot and killed, probably a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a big question, is how important is armor in your game? Are you going to have to basically set up as waddles, or is it more likely you want to talk yourself out of a fight before it starts? Or are you going to have to deal with something like a GURP sniper, which basically is a one-shot kill and just about anybody?
Yeah.
And I guess this also helps you determine the lethality of your game.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's anything you want to do within the game to make it your own. Like, right now I'm running a Forgotten Realms game, but I crossed it with Stargate, and it's a blast. Because everybody's playing essentially a modern, ultra-modern character in the Forgotten Realms, and it's adding a really unique element. I discuss this with my players before they start, so they're not being surprised by it, and I don't have anybody complaining. Like, I don't have any Realms lawyers saying, that's not accurate! Which makes it a lot easier.
Yes.
Because, I don't know, I guess it's just part of the thing is, it's a social contract, pure and simple. And by having a social contract before you start, it cuts down on a lot of issues. What's particularly interesting, though, is I actually found something on another podcast where Fear of the Boot did a group template, which basically is part of a Session Zero, where they basically set up what the group template is going to be doing for the game. So it's just another way of looking at the same idea.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, if you hand this out and you all sit down with your sheets of paper and pencils, it's not as thorough as some of the other ones we've talked about, but at least give you an idea of how does this party play well with each other? And that'll cut down not just your GM player issues, but also player issues. Are you going to have PvP? Are you going to be able to steal from each other? Do you have the same quest, or are you going to have conflicting goals? By answering these before you start, you're less likely to feel betrayed. Or if you are betrayed, it's not a big deal, because it's part of the game. But, anywho, yeah. I think we've talked this one pretty much out. Anything else?
Yeah, I think that that kind of covers the gambit there for that.
I think so.
So, all right. Wow, we actually ran this one a little long. Not too bad. Too bad. So far, I have, almost 27 over? I've always wanted to try to keep these things to an hour, but I don't think we've done that in quite a long time. So.
We babble.
Yeah, we babble. I babble. I know I babble. So, that said, if you have anything you want to tell us, you can contact us by sending us an email at info@rbgcircus.com. You can try to do our SpeakPipe application. At least one person tried that, and it didn't work. But if you go to the Facebook page, there's a link there to send voicemail. Or if you go to rbgcircus.com, there's a link right off the homepage to send us a voicemail as well. We haven't really had one of those in a while, so please do. You can obviously post comments on our Facebook page, the comment block, a Google Plus page. Facebook, I think, kind of works the best for most general comments, I think. I think more people use Facebook than any of the other methods.
Yeah.
I still have stickers, so if you want to send me in a topic that you want us to cover, you know what? I'll send you some stickers. And, oh, hey, you know what? I still have those iTunes cards, so whoever sends me a topic that we use, I'll definitely send you an iTunes card, too, for, I think it's $25.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't bad. I have no use for them. I don't use iTunes.
Fair enough.
So it's like, hey. What was that?
Oh, and if any of our audience wants to tell us about their changing preferences or if they ever use a Session Zero, we want to hear about it as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, actually, I think that'd be very interesting. Not to mention, I think it'd be very interesting to know, probably like kind of like us, what's the one thing that has definitely changed? The biggest change you've done from when you started gaming to now? That'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe kind of like what game did you not like when you started a game, but you love now? Are you softened on, or and vice versa? I think that could be very interesting.
Oh, absolutely, because, as you grow up, things change.
Say it isn't so.
Yeah.
All right, is there anything else we need to cover, or we can put this one in the books?
I think we're good. Good.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and put this one in the books, and I think we will see everyone in about 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.